Good morning. Thanks for coming out this morning. I am Courtney Perry. I'm a practicing attorney. I also teach a couple classes over at Emory's Law School. And Scott has asked me to come in today and talk about the GPL version 3 license, which was kind of throwing me a bit of a curveball. I do a great deal of intellectual property work, both on the academic and the practical side. This was a little bit new to me, but I'm coming at this from something of a different perspective, which hopefully was the intention. I'm assuming that most of y'all are kind of hardcore tech folks. I am not one. That will become very apparent as I speak, so I try not to snow people. If I tried to convince y'all that I was this real hardcore hacker kind of chick, you would start laughing your asses off instantly because it's apparent I am not. I am, however, a fairly good lawyer, which I'm betting none of y'all are. Any lawyers out there?
Social engineering.
So I've got two friends who are lawyers. Does that help?
There's some lawyers with friends?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, he's actually in it. He's one of the like two ethical ones in Tennessee. So.
Wow. Okay. Cool.
Two. My brother's a lawyer.
I'm sorry. I used to let him come to Thanksgiving and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Oh, you live in D.C. Oh, that's where my people breed.
Yeah, like, if I throw a rock,
you hit three as a general rule. Yeah, I think.
And they would all sue you.
I believe the standard joke on that one is, why does D.C. have the most lawyers per capita and New Jersey has the most landfills per capita? And the answer, of course, is New Jersey got first choice. Which actually kind of leads into my favorite lawyer joke of all times, which is the actual true statement, which there are actually only three lawyer jokes. The rest are true stories. But from that standpoint, I'm going to talk a little bit at the outset about the version 3 of the new license. And I want to talk a little bit about, from a legal standpoint, what it does and doesn't do. And I've left a fair chunk for discussion because I'm sure that I would not have anticipated the things that y'all might want me to talk about or might want to ask, which I might say, oh, hell, I don't know. But someone else in here might have a good answer to get us forward on that. So I've got a little bit of prepared remarks. Some of it will be old hat for some of y'all. I have found, however, especially when I teach, never to assume any particular level of knowledge. There'll be someone in here, at least, who has no clue what the hell we're talking about, besides this was a room that was air-conditioned and quiet, and they could sit down quietly for a few minutes. And I don't want to be speaking a complete foreign language. So we're going to start with a little bit of background. The GPL project overall started with Richard Stalling, who is something of a zealot. Is he in here today?
He's everywhere, really.
I assume he would be very loud, but you know, he could be throwing a rock at me and I wouldn't know it's him. But so obviously he has a very strong set of beliefs about just how free the world ought to be. And I think that that's a very interesting thing. Again, here's where I start coming from a lawyer perspective. I read a great deal about his history and the things he was developing, and I recognize many of those words and have a vague understanding of what they probably do in terms of computer programs. A lot of my friends live in your world, and so I've started to accept that many words that I used to know no longer mean what I think they do. When my husband suggested installing an airport some years ago in our house, I was very upset. I later have learned just to wait until context occurs, or just to stop listening and assume that there won't actually be runways and tarmac. But from a legal standpoint of what he's trying to do, it's interesting. And I got to say, the term copyleft just tickles me. I love that. His basic shtick, as I think most by the laughs and the grins I'm seeing, most of y'all know, is that everything should always be free for everyone. He bases his overview of the world is based on his four freedoms, which when we're talking about software, which he seems to be doing all the time, is the freedom to use the software any way you want to, the freedom to share the software with anyone at any time, the freedom to change it, which of course would, you know, cause Microsoft to spit blood and such, and the freedom to share those changes. I gotta say, for a dogmatic sort of guy, he is very consistent, and I can really appreciate the things he believes in. What you'll find me every now and again making I try to avoid scathing, but at least the somewhat snarky comments, is that he has bought into his own system so much that he refuses to acknowledge that perhaps there's value to something else also. And just as he thinks everyone should be doing this because it's great, and he doesn't notice that he is so insistent that everyone follow his path, that he doesn't notice that he is as insistent on that as Microsoft and the evil empire is on everyone following their way of life. And you know, the fact that he refers to free freedoms, and you're free to do exactly the way he wants you to do it. As long as that's what you wanted to do, then we're all free and happy together. I contrast this to an extent with Lawrence Lessig and his Creative Commons folks. I know that they are more broad-based against other forms of intellectual property, not just focused on the computer software. Their licenses are much easier to work with, frankly, than his, and than Stallings, in the...
Stallman?
Yes.
Stallman.
I thought you said that before, no? Richard Stallman.
Stallman, I'm sorry. I've been reading his shit all week and have been calling him the wrong name the entire time. But so the entire project is very interesting. But he has the GPL project is definitely very limited, and for all that he wants you to be able to share and change things, he doesn't want you to be able to share and change his stuff. So if you wanted a more looser framework, the Lessig stuff, and since he's kind of a lawyer and academic, I kind of understood his perspective a little more easily. But his stuff, if you just want a basic license that you can give away what you want to give away and keep what you want to keep, that would be the one to talk about. That's not this talk, but a lot of what I'm looking at the GPL stuff as is in contrast to his. That's a much looser form. This one, however, because of the copyleft is what he calls it, you have the ability to protect the downstream user. And that's what the copyleft is all about. Copyright, of course, is federal mandated law. Anytime you create something with very low standards of thresholds of originality, upon fixation, which is when we used to think in terms of writing, but doing it on a computer counts, as soon as it's fixed in tangible media, and again, notwithstanding the fact that fixed in tangible media is not how one would normally describe computer screens, that counts. last year's speech was why software and copyrights just don't fit at all. So I'll try not to rehash that. But so as soon as it's fixed in tangible media, it is copyrighted. Unlike the patent process, which is very long and expensive and requires a whole lot of my people, the copyright process happens as soon as you create something and write it down. And once it's written down, it's protected. You do not have to file it. You do not have to put copyright notices on it anymore. Just the act of creation and fixation is sufficient. Well, okay, that means that as soon as any sort of code is written, and code counts as a copyrightable work, even though it shouldn't. But once your code is written, you are attached with the federal law, whether you meant to or not. So anyone who then uses your code downstream, copies it on any level, is violating your copyright. Now, a lot of y'all, like the students who got up this morning and came in to hear about the GPL, I assume most of y'all are kind of into the free shareware kind of stuff, where you want to be able to use each other's work. You want to be able to build on each other's stuff. And that's a really cool community, which again is fairly foreign to my people who don't share and don't play well with others. The fact that y'all have gone to the extreme of realizing that we all do better, and it's also a very traditional copyright aspect, standing on the shoulders of those before you. We will get much further if we can use the works of those that come before us. Ironically, for all that it seems to have become a negative factor in the IP world, or in the IT world rather, copyright and patent initially was formed in this country with that intention. Our copyright and patent laws are not intended to protect the natural rights of the property over intangible property. That's a European approach. I wrote this book, therefore it's mine, and I have the same rights over it that I would have over something that I bought, or that chair if I stole it well enough and someone thought I bought it, or something to that effect, that my natural rights over my intangible property, my intellectual property, are the same God-given rights as over my physical property. That's the European approach. The United States approach, very intentionally, and the Constitution was written very differently. And it was written with the intention that we need to encourage both the arts and the sciences. And the way to encourage them is, because our founding fathers are pretty clever guys, to make it financially doable. There's a certain amount of social stuff that comes in there too, as we were breaking away from the entire system of aristocracy. Well, okay, who was it that funded the artists and the scientists prior to our version of society? That would be the aristocrats who had the money to do that. And they liked to have poets around, they liked to have paintings drawn of them. The church funded a great deal of the art too, which explains why for hundreds of years all of the art was religious, and we had issues with science going forward. But so it was the folks with the money who funded the arts and the sciences. As we were trying to create a much more egalitarian society, it was fairly obvious, although we still would have some rich folks, it was not going to be the same stratified society, and we weren't going to have that level of folks to rely on to fund it. So let's make it market-driven, and let's make sure that the artists, being either writers or the scientists or whatever they are, can make money on what they're doing because that will encourage the production of the arts and of the sciences, and we got to get it out in the market. If we get it out in the market, we'll give those guys a limited monopoly so they can profit from their works, and then the monopoly will expire, and the next guys can use on it and build on it. But even especially with books, getting the books out into the market is what's getting the ideas and the thought process out there. So even if the copyright on the book lasts a fairly long time, you're getting the ideas in the market, people can build on those ideas. And that's what the entire intellectual properties system set up in the Constitution is intended to do. Like I said, I find it interesting that when I'm reading all of the stuff in the current discussions, how copyright has become this evil thing, and patents even more so, but the intention of the law was actually to benefit creation and to encourage the production of scientific and artistic works. Well, that doesn't seem to exactly be doing that, because those of you who are creating this kind of work obviously are struggling against the law. And that's where the law is supposed to adapt. This is a kind of a long jurisprudence view of it. And again, I'm coming at this from a different background, I think, than you guys. But the jurisprudential view of it is, okay, the law as it exists doesn't fit what you guys are doing. Clearly it doesn't fit, or we wouldn't be in here talking about the GPL works, and Lessig's folks wouldn't be crusading about, and I know that he's technically not Rang anymore, but it's still his folks. But so obviously there's a misfit between the law and what you guys are doing. And so the law is supposed to adapt. Unfortunately, the law adapts very slowly. Lawyers don't like change any more than other people, and since we have lots of really big words and lots of power with which to keep change from occurring in our world, we tend to keep it from doing so. But no one likes change, and I think that's one of the reasons there's some backlash against the new version of the GPL. Looking at it from my kind of outsider perspective, I don't think that's what the fuss is about. It's a perfectly decent document. But there are a lot of people who really, really hate it, and I think a large part of that comes back to we all hate change. It scares us, and it's not in our comfortable little boxes. We'll get back to that. This is why I don't do PowerPoint. I have my notes, but that's enough. So anyway, we have the jurisprudential theory on what intellectual property is supposed to be. Right now, obviously, copyright's not addressing y'all's issues, because you're creating this code, and again, code is not what copyright was intended to start to address anyway. Copyright's supposed to be pretty shit, and songs, and art, and books. It's not supposed to be something that has an effect and a purpose. Really, software fits better into the patent schema, which is machines and inventions. Because obviously it's not the brilliant expression of your words that matters when you're making code. It's what it makes the machine do. And if it didn't make the machine do something, your words would really not have a great deal of value. Yeah?
Just to point out, the sort of people who have issues with copyrights have even more problems with patent itself.
Yes. Yes. Oh, I know. And I realize as I've delved into some of these issues that the patents make people even more crazy, and the reason is that the patents have much stronger legal protection. Your right to exclude people from something you have patented is huge compared to your right to exclude people from using what you've copyrighted. And both of those are anathema to the people who want to share their code freely. And it's interesting, patents right now, like I said, from an intellectual standpoint, before y'all start getting out the tar and the feathers, as I say that patents are the answer, from an intellectual or an academic standpoint, patents fit copyright and software, or fit software very well, and copyright fits it very badly. One of the huge problems right now, and it's not honestly just in technology issues, I do not know what they have put in the water at the patent office, but those people have been just mind-blowingly insane for the past decade. I don't know what's going on.
Did Microsoft just get granted a patent for page up and page down?
It's the business patents. I have not yet heard someone who got the patent for alphabetizing, but it's that close. I literally have at home a printout that one of my students gave me the patent number on. He quoted in a paper. I'm like, oh, you're making that one up. And I went and pulled it up. It was a 10-year-old whose dad was a patent lawyer with a sense of humor, who filed a patent for, you normally get on a swing and you swing forward and back. Okay, everyone who has ever been on a swing at some point, then you sat the other way on the swing and went that way.
Yeah.
It's patented. Getting it, instead of sitting on the swing this way and swinging forward and back, doing it the other way and hit the kid next to you like we have all done, or maybe done it when the kid's not there and just swung back and forth that way. That is a patented process now. If you do that on a playground, well, people are going to ask you why you're on the playground. If you're like me, you get that question a lot. Sometimes I take my kid along as camouflage. Sometimes, I just don't play on the playground. But if you sit the other way on the swing and go side to side, I kid you not, I have pulled it off the patent office's database. That is a patented process. When that's patented, you just throw up your hands and say, okay, when
that
you kids...
That should be nothing.
Patents mean nothing. Yeah. It is completely irrational, yeah.
Well, two things both relate to that. One, I think the whole sort of tumultuous nature of patent law right now really started when the patent office said you can patent organisms. And that threw everything into...
Which is in direct violation of patent law. Basic patent law tells you that you cannot patent something that exists in nature. You can patent inventions, but not discoveries. If I discovered gravity, I think someone beat me to that, but if I discovered gravity, I could not patent that because it is a natural force. It's a natural thing. I didn't create it. I didn't invent it.
But that doesn't cover created organisms.
Well,
but a created organism would probably...
There's a difference between a modified organism and I don't think anyone's actually created life out of dust yet. I'm sometimes behind on the science. But the basic patent schema, I think I would have heard about that. But basic patent schema should never have applied to any of those organisms. The fact that you can own a disease strain is in direct violation of the basic foundations of patent law. So yeah, there's something in their Kool-Aid. I would kind of like to have some. It's probably really fun. But they've gone insane. And I will in no way defend what they're currently doing. And again, it's not just technology. It's business method patents, which I swear to God, someone's going to patent putting their files in alphabetical order, and it's going to be issued. The patent office is denying patents on things that are actually very groundbreaking and exciting, and are issuing patents on, I wish I were kidding, swinging sideways.
Yeah. The other point, that being, there is, in intellectual property law of all stripes, it's important to note, there's a difference between simply being granted a patent or making your copyright registered and official, and actually being able to take litigative action on that.
That's because of my people. We screw up a lot of stuff. We have made it virtually impossible for people to defend against even bogus actions. That's one of the legitimate criticisms that a lot of people throw at Microsoft and the other big evil companies, is that if you are an independent creator and you have come up with something really cool that you would like to either make some money on, which really is not a bad thing, but you would like to make some money so you can pay your rent and buy some shoes and that sort of stuff, or if you would like to give it away and share it with the community, because the community would value from that, and that's what you want to do with it. Either way, that's your choice to go one way or the other, but you get the cease and desist letter from Microsoft, or worse than coming from Microsoft in my mind, is from one of these little firms who do nothing except buy up patents.
Patents,
exactly. Those sorts of folks who aren't actually, at least Microsoft, I mean, I'm sorry, when I turn on my computer, I get all sorts of crap from Microsoft because it runs my computer. And I'm happy with that because I can go to a store and I can buy it and I can spend 15 hours on some tech support that doesn't work. I do not have Vista. I was at least that smart. I had to buy a Lenovo and beg and grovel and go through weird side doors to get it, but I didn't have to get that program on it at least. I have my own issues. But can somebody else fix this for me? The issue starts out though with the fact that at least Microsoft is bloody presenting a consumer good, and it's one that people like me want. I realize that many of y'all find their stuff very fettering and upsetting because you would rather work off of a more open database or a more open operating system. Well, for those of me who would look at it and say, oh, for the love of God, please, I want to hit on, I want it to turn on. I'm not sure why I have to hit on to make it turn off, but I'm okay with that too. I'm trainable. Some of the idiosyncrasies I'll go along with, but I want to turn my computer on and have it work. I mean, I drive a Toyota now. I've driven Hondas most of my life, because with cars it's the same thing. I want to turn it on, I want it to drive, I want it to get me where I'm going. I feel the same way about computers. I don't want to tinker with it. My phone is a phone. It actually has a camera now, which is vaguely cool, but I want my phone to talk. I don't want to keep my calendar, I don't want it to sound like I have to walk the dog. I want it to talk. I want my computer to turn on, crunch some words for me, let me surf and do shit on there that is not particularly productive, but fun, we all do it anyway. And I have to confess, I have a number of friends who are religiously, zealously trying to convert me into an actual gamer, so I have some other stuff on there to do that as well. It's got cool graphics now. I'm almost up to the 1990s. But there's a large market like me that wants our computer to turn on and do what we tell it to. I am Microsoft's target audience. I don't want to think about it. God knows I don't want to try to reprogram any of it. So they at least are giving us something of use.
Yeah.
The patent trolls aren't. They are just sucking up patents, and they are misusing the... And I get kind of angry about them the same way I get very angry about the trial lawyers who do the huge the huge lawsuits against, well, I know that we figured smoking was bad, but I've been smoking for 50 years, 10 packs a day, and since I'm sick now, I think I should be able to sue the cigarette companies because they made me do, hate the big class action suits. I think they're destroying American business. And that's, and one reason it really gets to me, and see, I have my little zealot stripe too, which is they're misusing the system that I'm a professional in. Yeah. I don't like seeing the trial system misused, and I hate seeing the patent system misused the same way. It's supposed to protect and encourage innovation, and it's not. First off, the patent people have gone insane, and they issue absolutely insane stuff.
That number of people.
And page up, page down. What was the one that they, the one click, the one click ordering. I'm like, the idea of remembering my data so I can buy shit from you more easily, that's not innovative. That's what people have been doing in stores since it was a general store who remembered my order and would have it ready for me.
Yeah.
That's basics of commerce. It's not new or innovative, certainly not non-obvious. There's a reason when I walk into a Mexican restaurant, the margarita usually beats me to the table. Okay, there are two reasons. One is that I'm a fairly strong alcoholic. The other one is that
those lawyers are.
Tony knows me. He knows if I'm coming in there, I'm going to order the jumbo margarita with salt and extra limes, and it's going to be there because he knows that if he makes it easy for me to spend my money, I will. Apparently, he should have patented that because he could have beat Amazon to it. But when those kinds of patents issue, it's misusing the system. And so you have to find another approach. And that's why what the GPL folks are doing is fascinating to me, because you actually are looking at a broken system. I hate that my system is broken. I hate that trial lawyers can put people out of business by taking people's stupidity and profiting from it. How have y'all ever gotten those notices? Hi, you can be in this class action lawsuit. Have y'all ever gotten those millions of dollars?
I actually got, I got like 20 cents or something like that.
I always make a point of opting out. It's kind of, I have like a Manzella streak. I always go out of my way to opt out. Do you ever try to opt out of those? Boy, it's hard.
It's hard.
It's hard to opt out. Once they decide you're in, your name is being used in vain to hold up some company somewhere for a lot of money, and you know who gets the money.
I got $100 from Verizon for their false advertising deal where they were telling everybody they could have unlimited internet access on all their posters in giant letters, and it was actually capped.
Well, it worked with Comcast too.
I hope it does.
Oh, that's later today.
And you know, there are false advertising claims. There are ways to use the law correctly to stop false advertising.
Yeah, I think there's other means to
There are other means to do that other than the class action suit where the lawyers get rich and the companies get screwed.
Kind of criminal action, frankly.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was very angry. I felt like I'd been taken advantage.
And there are lots of consumer protection and advertising laws that do, in fact, have that effect. And so by using the class action club to stop a particular behavior, the system's being misused and abused, frankly. What's happening with patents right now is the same thing. So although from an academic legal standpoint, we really shouldn't be applying copyright to y'all's work, it should be patents. The patent system's so bloody screwed up, it would do worse right now, although it should actually be more effective. The reason that patents can be more easily abused is because the coverage is so broad. In copyright, all that's protected is your actual expression. So if you wrote a piece of code on how to do something, the what's covered is only how you express it. What is covered is not the cool idea you had of what needs this problem that needs to be solved. So if you have a problem that needs to be solved, your cool solution to it in a patent, that cool solution, that entire approach is patented. No one else can do the same thing, even through another means, basically. But with copyright, it's only exactly how you did it. Which, of course, gets into very difficult issues when we're talking about computer code, because the entire copyright analysis just bulks up and screams and bleeds and lies on the floor for a while, because it doesn't really match. Again, that's a different speech. But the idea of the GPL, and the Creative Commons to a certain extent as well, is that, okay, the law's not doing what we need, so how can we work within the law to get the result we want? And that to me is kind of cool, because usually, in fact, the panel I'm doing right after this one is where I talk to people who think that they should have all rights to everything all the time. And I didn't make it this year, but I keep prompting them to come in with a big no sign. I want no. How about that? No. Or a club. A no club would be even better. People like smack you over the head and say, no, you can't steal. Yeah.
From no clue back.
I like that. I need to, I'm sure I can find one in the dealership.
Oh, yeah.
No. No, no, you can't steal. But that's not what the GPL folks are about. They're about saying, here's what the law does as default. We want to change that. The law as a default says, I created this code, it's mine. You can't change it because that's the modifications of a code are a derivative work, and that's one of the express rights of the Copyright Act that is exclusive to the owner. And the right to modify it, the right to change it down the road, the right to copy it, the right to share it, all of those things are the creator's exclusive rights under the copyright law. Well, nothing in the copyright law says you have to exercise those rights. You can give them away. You can, when you put stuff on the on your website, you can put on there, this is all my shit, you can't steal it. Well, yeah, people may anyway, but it's illegal when they do it. Or you can put on there, hey, take this stuff, I don't care. It's free for everyone to use. And if you as the creator say, hey, take this stuff, it's free to use, then anyone can use it. That's where the Creative Commons folks start, but that's where they also stop. The problem with that, obviously, is if you have just a, if you just waive your rights to whatever you've created, be it something artistic or something code-based, if you waive your rights and say, hey, go ahead, I don't need this proprietarily, take this, use this, make it better, the community will benefit. Well, when the next guy gets it and says, oh, that was really good. Well, let me tinker with this little thing. Now, I'm going to package it and sell it, not let anyone else ever use it again. Well, that kind of took your gift to the community and screwed it, basically. So what the GPL's overall purpose is to protect, not is not just to allow you to give your shit away for free, but it is also to protect the downstream user. Copyleft, and again, I love the term. Copyright makes sure that each person who adds to something owns it and can control it. Copyleft is taking the exact opposite approach, which is not only do I want to put this out into the stream of commerce without restrictions, I want to make sure it bloody well stays there. I don't want someone else yanking it back out, because human nature being what it is, if there's something good, someone's going to find a way to profit on it. Which I should point out is not a problem under any of the GPL schema. And that's something that I also, as I was like, oh God, yeah, we tried communism, it didn't work. But you look at the GPL folks, and I was impressed to see that that was not the theory there. And I love the distinction, which is probably old hat to you. That's when I read it for the first time like a month ago and was really turned on by it. We're talking about free speech, not free beer. And so when you use the term freedom, it's about the freedom to express and all of his four freedoms, all these things. It's not necessarily without a price. You can sell your GPL licensed code, which he points out many which the GPL folks many times will point out in their literature and in their website and in all of their stuff, and a couple times in the license, is, in fact, we're a nonprofit organization, so if you're making some money, gee, we could use some. So feel free to charge for these codes that you're making with our license, and if you want to write a check, that'd be fine too. You know, it takes money. So you can sell your code that's under the GPL license, the version 3 one, and that's just ducky. What you can't do is restrict use downstream. And it is a very strangely drafted document. It looks to me as if there were some lawyers involved, but this is when you read this draft of the, when you read the version 3 license, this is not how lawyers speak. This is written to you guys, which at first offended me horribly, and I was going to go through and say, this is all because of this, this is all because of this, and then I realized that I was being just as big a horrible snob as a lot of the software folks are, and that I was resisting change because it was change and it was different, and I sat down and felt hypocritical for a little while, and then reread the license again. I think it works. Now, you got to understand also, for at one point in my life, I taught legal research and writing, and so I was training all generations of lawyers to go out and, you know, fuck up y'all's lives, and we say that we teach legal drafting, the modern approach to legal drafting. I said modern, I think, started in the turn of the previous century, not the one we're in.
But we switched back to English from French.
Something like that. But modern drafting is supposed to be very clear English, very plain English, and it's not intended to have the heretofores and all of the frilly crap that lawyers are rightly given grief about writing in, and the aforementioned party. Well, the bad news is actually when you're writing a legal document, sometimes that is the clearest way to say it. The clearest, most direct way to say it is still not to be confused with plain English. I teach an MBA program at Emory now and again, and most of the guys that I teach are the evening students. They've already dealt with the general counsel's office, so they've already been kind of beaten into submission. But there's always someone who hadn't seen it before. So I give this talk about how legal drafting has now moved into modern usage and it's clear English. Here's an example. And that's when I admit that my people, when we say, yeah, just like y'all use terms that have real meaning and use them to do something else, when we say clear and plain language or clear and plain English, we don't mean what you mean. But it's much better than what we used to do. This thing, the GPL document, is written in English, which is why I found it horribly offensive at first, because that can't be done. That can't be right. And honestly, if you have a piece of software for which you are going to make millions of dollars, and this is going to be your bread and butter, huge project on which you will found your company and become the next Bill Gates. Everyone will then start hating you because you're successful. But I would try to get a lawyer to draft you something. This, I believe, is enforceable. I hate giving actual pronouncements about legal things, but there's one. I believe the GPL license is legally enforceable and is legally valid.
It has been just recently, actually. It was upheld by the Federal Appellate Court. Under copyright violation, copyleft was upheld.
Right.
Someone had basically taken the code of something that had been GPL, put it into their own program, and then
they violated the license. Yeah. There are a couple different cases where it has worked. My people don't say it's legally valid until it's been upheld at least 500 times. Because that means my people have been in work 500 different times and got lots of violations. But reading it, it's valid. Usually when a lot of my clients come to me with, well, here's the agreement that we wrote.
Oh boy.
And now we're in dispute over it. This is what it means. And I look at it and say, oh, that's what you had in mind when you signed this. I believe that. And what you wrote is not what you just said. It's actually, although this is where I get kind of snotty, it really is hard to take the basic ideas of I want to give you this on these terms and write it down so it really means that. Especially since litigators are excellent at taking what you sort of plainly write and making it mean something else. I'm a corporate lawyer. I am not a litigator. I do not go to court. I did once, actually, but that was for the travel company screwed me, and I was going to get my blood back. And I did it in small claims court. It was really terribly amusing. Find me in the bar later. I'll tell you the whole story. But that would be my... And I challenged Parkins to get in one. I have 100% victory, but that would also because I don't take my speeding tickets and challenge them. Because sometimes knowing when it's a lost cause is good. It's like, oh, yeah, you caught me. How much do I write a check for this time? Please don't take my license. And so far they haven't, so that's good. But I don't challenge those because, I was going that fast. In fact, I was going faster.
But often they don't show up, so you just...
But you have to. And they actually, the few times that I've seen people try that one, the cops are like that.
Yeah.
Working for me.
I
was in Florida.
I got arrested. They couldn't show up.
A guy who rear-ended me a long time ago actually got off on it because the cop didn't show. But it was one of those where, I was stopped, he was stopped. Then he tried to drive real fast. And he got cited because there was a cop right behind him. he got cited for that one. But I was supposed to show up for the trial. Okay. But they did it. It was right after I graduated from college. I was going on a trip with friends. Like, I'm not going to cancel my trip to come sit in this courtroom. So I just said, hey, no. So they rescheduled it. And then he, I think, was in jail for a DUI and couldn't make the appearance. It got rescheduled at times because the cop had left the force. So he eventually got off on it. So yeah, there are ways you can do that, but that's a different penalty. Sometimes I talk of Andrew on his busted video, but that's a different one too. Any rate, I started with that somewhere relevant, and I don't even know what it was. Upholding the GPL license. This is an enforceable contract. It is very strangely drafted, but it is an enforceable contract. I wanted to kind of go through it a little bit. I'm sorry, what?
I assume that there are attorneys that are of a similar mindset to the people who, somewhere in the university, who, agree with this set of precepts. Can't someone write a sort of more legally 5x5 document and send it to them and go, really, this is the verbiage you should use?
Of course. The answer is yes. Of course that could be done. There are plenty of lawyers who like these groups. And I'm sure they have some of their own. This was something that was, I'm going to wave this around so if you can see it and use this. Actually is a copy of the version 3 public license. So when I'm waving this aimlessly around, there's actually a purpose. I've been known to pick up completely random books and wave them as if they were different ones. But in this case, it is in fact the correct document. The issue that they've done here, very clearly they have decided that instead of getting a lawyer to draft this so it sounds something a lawyer wrote, because the downside to that is none of y'all would understand it. If you read something that my people wrote, you would not know what a bunch of it means. And we tend to forget that. I have to confess, I've now been doing this long enough that I look at what I think of as a very short and simple contract and say, okay, I give it to my clients, okay, read that, because each line in here means something and is important, and before we send this by, especially if it's someone I'm working with that's a new client, I don't know your business well enough, let me make sure that this fits what you're doing exactly, so read this. You'd think I would learn. I've been at this for a lot of years. And you'd think by now I would learn that when I tell a client to read this, they sometimes make it through the first page. But usually not. Their eyes glaze over and something else comes up, which is more interesting, like maybe their socks. Something is going to happen, which is going to drag their attention away from this, and they're not going to read it, or they are, and they're not going to understand it. Even what lawyers think of as very plainly drafted language isn't. We spend a lot of time learning to speak the way that we speak. It's a completely different dialect. It's just like I don't understand half of what you guys say, because you speak a different language. My people do also. It's why when you go to cocktail parties, we tend to speak to ourselves, because no one else wants to talk to us, until they need us, and then they like us a lot. But, so, by doing it this way, by drafting it in not what lawyers call plain English, but in what people would call plain English, it means that you can look at this, and you can read it, and you can understand it. And I don't mean that to sound as patronizing as it does. It's just that we know a different jargon than you do. And the way, for instance, one thing that I thought was really funny, which is funny only to me, and I recognize that, is when you look at, oh, where did they put the disclaimers? I was reading the disclaimer of warranty. Okay, in my world, that's big stuff. That's really sexy and fun to read what they've done. And the last line in it isn't a disclaimer of warranty. It's actually a limitation of liability. It belongs to the next section. For me, that's important, and is proof that that's written with someone else in mind, because a lawyer would never put that last sentence in section 15. We would have put it in section 16, and we never would have used that sentence because it's redundant to what's actually in chapter, in section 16. It's actually a summary of 16. When you say that, I'll read you the lines, I'm sure y'all not actually memorized this sufficiently to know exactly what the last line of section 15 is. The last line here is, the entire risk as to the quality and performance of the program is with you. Kind of like the force is with you. Is with you. We would never say that. Should the program prove defective, you assume the cost of all necessary servicing, repair, or correction. Well, that's not actually a disclaimer of warranty. That's a limitation of liability. Disclaimer of warranty means, this might not work. Good luck. And limitation of liability means, when it doesn't work, you're out of luck. I'm not going to wish you good luck. I'm going to tell you, you're out of luck. Microsoft's version of that is, this isn't going to work. But you knew that because it's a Microsoft product. And when it crashes your system, we'll send you a new disk. We'll be happy to do that. Your entire, if you read through the EULAs, the traditional, your complete remedy if it crashes and crashes your entire company's system is that they will be happy to send you a new disk with the program on it because you're just obviously defective.
Because you obviously want another copy of that.
You want a copy, but they just crashed your entire system and ate your child. Yeah, if you actually, I didn't bring a copy of it with me. One of the Microsoft EULAs actually has a section about nuclear war. Not as in, if there is one, we don't warrant our product, but it really is, if something goes wrong with our system and it causes one, you can't sue us. It's in there.
My plan is foiled.
And I looked at that and said, that one I had to actually read a few times. And then I had to stop and wonder what they actually thought they put in there. But, you know, Microsoft has some really good lawyers, so they tend to write what they mean. And I've read that a few more times. And, no, it really does disclaim liability for a nuclear war. And I thought, well, am I reading, did I accidentally get a copy of some weird classified government contract? This is clearly meant to be in the Pentagon. No, it was for Word. Because I had it. I was writing a paper on license agreements and such, and it was what I had on my system. It's like, well, yeah, I'm going to do my very deep consumer sample. What's on my system? And it just claimed nuclear war. Which then made me worry what my computer was doing when I was asleep. And I had a lot of strange thoughts on that, but it was very interesting to me that, in fact, if your computer causes a nuclear war, Bill Gates will send you a new disk. And that's how it's usually done. And so here the fact that they put the, we're not going to repair anything that we fix in the warranty claim, in the warranty section, means obviously that it was not written by my people to my people, because that belongs to the next section. and we won't fix it for you, you're screwed, is the way we say that is the way they do in fact say it in the next section, which is that we are not liable for any indirect, direct, consequential, blah, 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 damages. That's the whole, I teach the contract course, basically, indirect and consequential damages, because that's something y'all should know. Indirect and consequential damages, you know the poem about for one of the nail, the shoe was lost, for one of the shoe, the horse was lost, and we go through rider and messenger and battle and kingdom, all for the one of the nail? That's your indirect and consequential damages. You can't sue the blacksmith who didn't set the shoe right for losing the kingdom. That's, there are no indirect or consequential damages. And so that, and look, that's an important phrase, because when you when your warranty and your limitation of liabilities exclude indirect and consequential damages, that's why Bill Gates will send you a disc. Sorry about your house burning down, here's your new disc. And he's actually being kind, because in this one, you don't even get the disc.
Yeah,
in this one, if I burn down your house, yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
That's right. You don't need the discs anymore. See, I'm showing my.
Why put that in every contract? Why not just make it a law? Rather than have it in every single legal document pertaining to this.
Because for the sake of consumer protection, the way that it's supposed to be is that the default is you do actually do have those rights.
So why not just put in a thing saying we don't accept those? And
that's what it is. That's what that law. Section is. The law. No, the reason the law hasn't changed that way is the consumer advocates. Because although in software, it is just a no-brainer. None of y'all were surprised when I told you your house burned down, here's your disk. Yep. That's what y'all accept as the law. And that's, again, computers and the entire industry, the entire software, hardware industry has changed so fast and so at such lightning speed. My people are still talking about horses. I kid you not, we still talk about horses and saddles when we talk about commerce. And we've actually, the entire evolution of sales law and consumer good law started with horses and saddles, and that was the schema. And when we got to manufactured goods, it got confusing. Because if you were going through a factory, the whole industrial age changed how industry was done completely. It took the law 100 years to get around to reflecting that. There's a long time during which the common law adapted and the judges kind of figured out, well, what if that cart breaks down taking the cotton to the mill and guys didn't get their clothes in time to do, where does the line get drawn? And all of that took a long time to evolve, and if you're a complete legal geek like me, it's fascinating. I won't go into it for you guys, I promise. But it took the law a long time to catch up. The current law we have, the law of sales, the UCC, UCC Article 2, y'all, every time you buy something, it's bounded by the Article 2 of the Uniform Commercial Code. It's actually an incredibly good law, because what happened was we as lawyers, I was not born yet, I'm not that old, we waited for the industry to mature, and then we went and said, so how do you guys do business? And we made that the law. It was very revolutionary. Carl Llewellyn, who is the architect of that entire program, the entire law, was called horrible, horrible names because he spoke to business and let that impact how we did the law. But Article 2 is really the first of the modern laws, and it was meant to reflect how people do business and make the rules clear so that everyone knows them. When I represent clients, just a second, when I represent clients who sell stuff as opposed to your kind of stuff, like tangible things, they know the UCC. Now, they've never pulled out the code book. When I refer to the law, their eyes glaze over, they wait for me to finish and then tell them what to do in small words. But they know what the law is. Just like y'all know that you have no remedies against anyone you buy software from. You know that, because that's how the industry has evolved, that's exactly what your expectation is. But you know, if your car blows up, you kind of think that you should have some rights against someone for the, person sitting next to you who's now a charred corpse. You think you should probably have some remedy for the exploding Pinto. You think that you should have some remedies for other things, and since the same law applies to all of those transactions, the default law is still, you have remedies, because you expect them in most cases. In your case, you don't expect them, and the law does at least allow you to, through your contracts, set what your rules are. And that's what all of the EULAs have been. And the way that the EULAs kind of screw with copyright laws is fine too, but it's not nearly as interesting as what y'all are doing. You're giving me that look. What am I not answering?
So are we waiting on the software version of the Pinto case?
In some ways, yes, but I don't know what's going to happen, because the Pinto case was one where the law didn't change. The Pinto case was not perhaps the best analogy to use, except that it shows what people's expectations are. When we found out that Ford, for $14, could have put that piece of metal in there so that people wouldn't have been charred beyond recognition, we think Ford should have put that $14 piece of metal there once the memo came out saying, oh yeah, we knew that, and we figured out how much it would cost us to put the metal in versus how much it would cost us to sell the lawsuits, and the lawsuits were less, so we went ahead and burned people to death. It's fine with us. Okay, that's when the law said, took that no bat and smacked over the head with it and said, no, that's wrong. We don't accept that. But the law didn't change. The law was always very straightforward on that. With computer stuff, how you sell, what you create, all of that doesn't quite fit the existing law. And normally, it takes 100 years, first off, for your industry to settle down and churn along without changing anymore. Well, y'all aren't going to do that. You know, industrial age was a huge, shocking change at first, and then it settled into its little rut and churned along very happily. The information age, because we have to get these names, the information age is just as shocking a transformation of society, except that y'all are screwing it up because you're not stopping now. You've changed everything and now you should stop so the rest of us can catch up, and you're still changing shit.
Blame more.
I blame lots of people, but you haven't stopped yet. And so the law's not catching up, but even in terms of the law catching up, it takes us 100 years to catch up. But y'all aren't settling down, so what you're doing, and this is where we get back to the GPL, is you're making your own rules, which the law in many cases allows you to do. And this is really cool because you've taken law meant to protect your rights, blended it with, I say you as if y'all are the GPL folks, but you're the beneficiaries of it. The GPL folks have taken the basic copyright law, said that's not the effect we want. We're going to opt out of that, but we also want to protect our downstream users, and we're going to then take contract law, graft that onto the copyright that we have, and say we have these rights, so you can't just take this from us, because you can only take this if we let you take it. That's your basic copyright. So GPL is founded on copyright law. Without copyright law, the GPL license would not work. None of it would work. The GPL document wouldn't work if it weren't for copyright, because you wouldn't have any rights over the document. They say, we've written this, we own this, you may use it, here are the terms. And one of those terms they're imposing on each of the people who take software with the GPL attached to it is that you have to only use it in the way that I tell you you can. That's copyright law. For all that they say, we reject all of these infringements on our freedom, you're just making a different set of rules and imposing them, which is great. That's how the law is supposed to do it. We don't want to do it this way, but we're going to take that same machinery that protects authors' rights when they want to protect them and protect our rights, but in a different way. And he's found a way to make it so that it applies downstream. And that's what a lot of the terminology in here that gets a little strange is, but when you take it, when you use software or change software, tinker with software that comes under a GPL, you are bound by the terms of that, just like you're bound by the terms of the Microsoft Very Restrictive Use License. Same thing, just different rules.
Looser terms.
Looser terms, different terms. A lot of them are looser in that, yes, he wants you to have the four freedoms and you should be able to use and change and share, but only by his rules.
Yeah.
But his rules are great and it accomplishes the goal that this community of free software users wants, which is the ability to improve on each other's work and to use it and to be able to take your computer, which again, mine does what I want it to and what doesn't, I use unladylike language. I had issues with my computer. When I was still at a big firm, the IT guy knew me really well. I was actually banned from the server room. when I first started, I worked for two different big firms. And each time the IT guys, one of them was really cool, the other was kind of a bitch. But they first thought I was just an idiot because obviously I had issues with technology, and then they realized that no, I actually have an evil aura which consumes and devours electronics. Sam, after replacing my computer for the fifth time, told me I was not allowed to come see him in his office. He had a bunch of server crap in there. He's like, whenever you need something, call me, I'll come here. Stop sticking your head in my office, because he started getting afraid. One of my computers committed suicide. It was very strange and traumatic. It was sitting, it was happy. I had my back to it. I wasn't moving. I was reading stuff, and it just threw itself to the ground.
That's what you hear from reading the Microsoft license on your computer.
Yeah. I guess that was it. Perhaps that was one of the limitations of liability.
Did
yeah.
you get it?
I've got so many questions. I'm going to carry it down to say now.
I'm trying to stay away from it. I was like, ooh, that was expensive. I'll stay over here. I don't actually put my elbow through things, but just my presence may screw it up. I took out a really cool Alienware laptop this spring, and I feel really bad about it. I just checked my Nintendo a couple of times. Really, that's all I did, and it doesn't really work anymore.
First of all, I'm not a software. I'm like a mixed media guy. I'm a filmmaker, and there's some really interesting stuff going on with the GPL and the Creative Commons, as I do. And when I was in college, I took a really interesting class from a copyright lawyer named Joe Beck. I remember because he was one of the professors.
I know him.
I think he's the one who sued Rosa Parks, actually. But
he was the different
outcast
lawyer.
But
he is a brilliant copyright lawyer. If you ever actually needed someone to protect your rights, he's one of the best copyright litigators around. And he has been single-handedly responsible for some of the worst copyright decisions ever. But it's because he's such a good lawyer. His clients just happen to have the wrong side of it. And he screwed the law really bad. But he's a litigator. His job is to get the result for his client, not to do what's best for copyright law. I'm an academic.
That's the judges.
He got Judge Birch wrapped around his finger. Judge Birch, one of the smartest men on our bench, on the 11th Circuit bench. And Joe Beck just bloody bamboozled him. I was amazed. So he's a great lawyer.
The specific question I'm asking is that he, and I don't know if this is the legal terminology because this was not a class for lawyers, he talked about, one, that copyright is one of the few bodies of law that is pretty much international. That it transfers very well from country to country.
Finally, we are in the Berne Convention, so that is mostly true.
And then two, the sort of, that there is a, what's the word looking for, a protean nature to the rights that a copyright holder has over their work, and that you can sort of slice them as thin as you want.
We refer to it as a bundle of sticks, is the traditional analogy. He probably used that. In copyright law, you have a bundle of rights. You have the right to copy, the right to reproduce, all of the stuff that you want to do with it. Sell it, use it, copy it, change it. All of those things are individual rights, and you can give away, you know, and again, we use the bundle of sticks. I don't want to teach copyright law. I get really tired of doing the bundle of sticks. I always need to hold one when I give that. So I'm doing this in front of my students for hours at a time. But you can give away one of those sticks. You can cut the stick in half and give away different pieces of it. It's definitely one that you can just slice very thin and give away as many times as you want.
As that applies to the GPL, I have two questions then. One, how useful is the GPL internationally? How much, and has that even been tested yet? And then two, how much do I, as the creator of specifically creative work, I maybe creative work is the wrong word, but not software, using the GPL, how much leeway do I have to alter its terms?
None.
And say none whatsoever.
If you're trying to use the GPL for other creative things, I would recommend you go look at Creative Commons licenses instead. They'll apply much more to what you want to do. The GPL is very focused in scope, and it's focused for software code. You can do this with our code. You can use it this way. It would be awkward to use that for a painting. It would be awkward. You can, but the Creative Commons license will apply much more to other media. And in terms of international application, we're still trying to make sure it's applicable domestically. When you get to international law, the EU has a whole lot of different copyright approaches, and their patents are strange in different ways. So international, yeah, good luck. It's a crapshoot. But the GPL itself, on a domestic standpoint, I do want to kind of get back to things we're running low on time. I want to at least make sure I address the act or the document itself. It's a really good document. And I don't usually say that. And it took me a while, because I've been reading this thing for a while since Scott said, hey, why don't you talk about this time? I'm like, for what? Okay. Is that like Lawrence Lessig? No, not exactly. But the document itself, like I said, it's not written for lawyers. It's written so that y'all can read it and use it. And in fact, if you're using works under this act, I suggest you read it. The preamble is a hoot, for the record. We don't do preambles in contracts. That was my first, that's where I kind of had to go, oh, this will be one of those talks. It's like, Scott, you're setting me up. You're going to make me go in and say, this is a piece of crap, and then they're going to kill me. This is just for entertainment value, isn't it?
Oh, we might agree.
And I thought you were setting me up. I was like, oh, I'm going to have to come in and say, these guys are a bunch of nutballs. But they wrote a preamble. The preamble explains in very, very clear English what you can and can't do. And then the contract itself expands on it, the license itself expands on it, but the basic rule is you can take this, you can share this, you can change, you take my code, change it, work on it, do whatever the hell you want to it, but you can't combine it with something that has restrictive use terms on it. You can only combine it with other things under, used under the same license. And when you send it downstream, you and anyone else who touches it are bound by this restrictive license, just like the Microsoft system. If you use, if you agree to use Word by clicking here, I agree. I agree, whatever. Yeah, I'm 19. But when you get past the, you know, all the stuff you agree to, I won't copy this and give it to someone else. If I do give it to someone else, they don't use it in these terms, blah, 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 blah. GPL is the exact same scheme. I am binding you through my basic rights. I own this shit because of copyright law, and I am binding your use to my terms, but my terms are the opposite, thus copyleft instead of copyright, of the normal schema. Instead of saying you can't use this, you can't give this away, it says you must give this away. You can sell it, but you can't restrict anyone else's use to ever use any of this any more than you're restricted. And there's most of the act goes through the details of ways that you can't restrict it. You can't, and the one thing that I think is legitimate criticism from some folks and how they want to use stuff is you can't combine it with code that comes with restrictive use. And I can see how when you're trying, but I want to use, this does what I want and this does what I want, I can put them together, it's a really cool thing, but if one of them is bound to the GPL, you cannot combine it with a restrictive piece of software.
The same people who wrote the GPL did offer a lesser license for the same purpose.
They have a whole bevy of different stuff.
Yeah.
And the and obviously the product that they're pushing right now is version 3, but I think that the restrictions in version 3 make sense. And they have their whole little anti-patent thing going on. But, you know, into Microsoft's credit, Microsoft is giving y'all a lot of leeway and saying we won't enforce our patents against you. They're doing a lot of nice things on there, but yeah, anytime Microsoft says, no, trust me, you get a little squish. And that's understandable.
I was hoping to get, if you were able to get some comparison, describe some comparison between V2 and V3.
Yeah.
That was what I was hoping to get for us to further talk. It took 55 minutes.
It's been 55 minutes and I haven't gone there at all. The main things that they've changed are the patent approach, that they really have gotten more insistent about how patents interact and don't interact. You cannot combine on any level. They're very explicit about the patents, because one of the things that's developed in patent law since version 2 came out is not only the trolls who have gotten just horrible about it, but legitimate companies who actually produce products, Microsoft, who own a billion patents and will have kind of the cool thing to do these days is say, oh, well, I'm Microsoft, and you're doing this thing. Well, I tell you what. Obviously, you're violating one of my patents. Which one, I don't even know yet. But I'll tell my lawyers to find which one it is, and they'll tell me which one it is. And this is where the big evil empire does kind of deserve their bad rap, which is once Bill Gates, and he's gone too, but you know, work with him here. Once Bill Gates says, lawyers, go tell me which patent this violates. Well, okay, first off, he has lawyers like me. Well, I'm not a patent lawyer. But who will say, they'll look at your code and say, I have no clue what it does, but I recognize some of the words, and they're in one of these patent claims, so I think it violates these three patents that we own. Okay, go hire a lawyer to challenge that.
Yeah.
Good luck with that. Patent lawyers, I don't know any that work for less than $500 an hour.
Yeah.
So good luck. Well, good luck getting one to return your phone calls. And once he does, good luck paying the bill. So Microsoft can afford patent lawyers, and you can't. Unless any of y'all are particularly rich, in which case, talk to
me. Or have connections.
Their friends,
siblings.
Yeah, your brother. That's why you let your brother come to dinner. I get it now. But Microsoft is willing to cut these deals, saying, we won't do that anymore. But you're going to use our stuff, and you're going to acknowledge that. We can change this later. And so they're setting up their free network of, we won't sue you for patents, but you're getting sucked into their competing schema, and you're getting sucked into their restrictions. And even though right now they're being fairly nice about, oh no, really, we're not doing anything, crossing their fingers behind their backs, once you get sucked into having all of your stuff interlaced with theirs, then they can say, okay, that free stuff, yeah, that's over. Now, here's the new rules.
And they might never, but you
they
never
might
know
never,
what
they
want.
Might tomorrow.
You don't know what the rules are.
We're in a Cold War.
Yeah.
Seriously, between IBM, Microsoft, and Cisco, they have so many patents that if any one of them tried to go after the other, it would just explode.
And,
so we're in
but you know,
don't do it.
The lawyers love that shit.
Yeah.
When those lawsuits hit, the lawyers get rich and they encourage it. And somewhere you'll have a short-sighted, greedy businessman who will lose the lawyers. And Cold War is a great analogy, because one of the traditional analogies on lawyers is that we're nuclear weapons. If one side has one, the other side needs one. Once he turns loose, the devastation is endless.
So Microsoft is warning against lawyers.
Microsoft loves lawyers.
Yeah.
They keep us fat and happy. But so the GPL distrust of the current, oh, go ahead and use our patents. Introduce it into your work, I think, is very well grounded. I tend not to be a big conspiracy theorist. I actually, you know, spent most of my career working for big corporations, so I don't think of them as evil, but frankly, the GPL folks are very wise to be distrustful of the current, go ahead and use our patents. So in their license, they have very clearly said, you cannot introduce any of that patent-tainted crap. But, and again, a large problem with the patents is that the patent trolls have become big, and the big companies have gotten to the point where they own so many patents, including the swing going sideways thing, that no matter what software you come up with, they can find you infringing on a patent they own somewhere. And if you took it through an appellate court, you'd probably win. So can you take it through the appellate court? Hell no, you can't take it through the appellate court, again, unless you're really rich. And as I said, please talk to me. So this, and again, that's where the misuse of my system is screwing innovation. And that's why the version 3 is very strict about not allowing that kind of intermingling. Yeah.
So the GPL is based on copyright law, right?
Mm-hmm. Copyright law and licensing law.
You can file a patent for software type processes, right?
Some patents will apply to software, yes.
If you protect something with the GPL and somebody patents it, are they like parallel? Like, are they completely independent? And so you can
the intention of GPL 3 is that if you have taken something off of a GPL 3 document or GPL 3 code, if you create something patentable, you can go ahead and get your patent. I'm not trying to keep you from your property rights and your patent, but you can't restrict anyone ever from using it. You can get it, but you can't use it, so you know, why would you file it? But no, the other thing that by keeping the pre-patented stuff out expressly by its terms, what it prevents is someone, kind of, you know, Microsoft getting its threads inside and eventually saying, oh, all that GPL stuff, yeah, we actually own it now. And you can't use it because we hold a patent on it. We're not going to sue any of those users, but boy, are we going to insist on license fees. And that's what the next step really would be. They're not going to sue the end users. They're going to insist on license fees from anyone who touches the GPL piece of code. And obviously, that's anathema to the intention of the GPL. So although a lot of people, I think, are very frustrated by the very strict patent restrictions in the GPL, they're very reasonable. And I don't blame them a bit for throwing them in there. And I'm trying to think there's something else in particular. So it affects what you can do and what you can use and combine GPL documents with. But that is honestly a very strict restriction in the GPL. You cannot introduce other people's patent works into it, even if you have a use license. But if they allowed that taint in, it would eventually undo the entire system. There'd be a lawsuit 10 years from now and GPL would be out. So I think that the patent restriction is one of the biggest, most controversial in there, because it's the one that just seems to me, aside from, ooh, different, ooh, 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 which I see a lot of people fussing and whining about, the patent one seems like the one that, from a rational standpoint, would affect y'all's work the most. But from a legal standpoint, he's got to have that in there when he has it. Yeah.
This is more a general copyright question, but...
Can you ask me that one after? Because Scott's going to kill me if I don't at least go through the other things that are different about that. How are we doing on time? Oh, we are, in fact, running late. The two other things that I think were the main changes in general terms on the GPL 3 from GPL 2 is that they've also taken a couple, they have a section in there that addresses the DMCA, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. And that's one where, okay, I got to say, I just kind of disagree with some of this shit. The DMCA was put into copyright law as an attempt, desperate and stupid though it may have been, to try, because the music companies are the ones who ran that part and said, oh my God, people used to be able to make bad cassette tapes off of their albums, and that sucked, but we kind of sucked it up and dealt with it, but oh my God, now they can make digital recordings, and they're just as good. Anyone who has old bootleg tapes, I'm showing my age here, like 8th generation bootleg tapes from dead concerts and stuff.
There's no life before leather.
And so when you end up, you know, each generation tape out sucks more, and when the music companies noticed some many years after we all owned them, that, oh my God, you mean you can make a digital recording of that that's just as good and doesn't like deteriorate a generation? Oh shit! And so they went out and bought some congressmen and passed the DMCA. And one of the things that they've been trying to do with that is to, when they realized rationally, we can't stay ahead of the pirates, because, I'm sorry, you guys are smarter than they are, and you have a lot of time to hack and think about these things, and they don't. So they said, what we're going to do is put in some of these, the different ways that we're going to try to keep things from being copied. You have to have some of the reproduction management technology in DVD players. You have to have it in a lot of other things. And since we know we're not good enough to stay ahead of the hackers, instead of just trying to have the best technology in each machine, we're going to say it's illegal to hack through the protections we put in there. Well, okay.
From their standpoint, it makes sense.
From their standpoint, it makes sense. From a traditional copyright standpoint, because, I mean, I'm sorry, the artists who are recording that stuff really would prefer if you'd pay them. I mean, hell, I'm traditional enough. I bought this. You can download the whole thing for free, because Lessig said, there we go. This is Free Culture, one of Lessig's big books. Big thing, a relative term. But you can download this for free on the internet. I don't like doing that because he wrote this as a book and I should buy it, so I do. Same with music. I'll listen to shit my friends burn for me. If I like it, I'm going to go buy it. I'm not just going to use the burned copy because I feel kind of hypocritical saying that copyright matters, but then violating it myself. The DMCA is flawed in a lot of different ways, obviously, and that's a different panel. I think actually you probably have that panel. Sitting on that, you'll see all the things that are wrong with it. There are aspects of the GPL which tries to address some of the DMCA by saying that if we're doing this, it's not nothing. One of the things that I thought was interesting was one line says, this isn't violating the DMCA. Well, you can't say that, it doesn't do any good, but it's in there, it's a nice theory. The interesting part about the DMCA that's in there is them saying that nothing in a GPL code can be deemed to be protected by the DMCA. That, I don't know if it's enforceable or not, but it's interesting. It says that nothing in here will be deemed to be a reproduction management device. Nothing under a GPL license, none of this code will be deemed to be that stuff that's protected from hacking. Which was interesting. Yeah. They were thinking, because if someone had been able to come through and say, oh, but this piece of code covered by GPL is actually protected from hacking by the DMCA, because it actually... If the code had anything to do with reproducing music or was part of any of the internal drives on a DVD player or anything else, then it could well be covered by the DMCA's anti-hacking sections. And so there's an express section in here, part of which I think was interesting but won't work, and part of which I'm actually very interested to see when it's challenged if it does work, is that nothing done under a GPL license can be deemed to be covered by the anti-hacking provisions of the DMCA. Well, basic commercial law, you have opt-out provisions. Like I've been talking about, saying, well, you don't want to enforce these licenses. You don't want to enforce your copyrights, so you don't have to. You don't want to offer warranties, so you don't have to. You're allowed to opt out of a lot of basic law by how you write your contract. Well, you can't really do that with bootleg laws, so that section is interesting. The what they keep calling the anti-TiVoization section is the other main new thing in there, saying that we really hate it when there's code that we can't tamper with, so we're going to try to prevent that from happening. Making sure that nothing of the GPL, no GPL covered code is ever going to be twisted into a piece of code that can't be tampered with, which really I think is a little bit redundant to their basic four freedoms, but because of how the industry evolved and the anti-TiVoization issues that made everyone so hot and bothered, they actually put that in expressly as well. And those were the three big changes from version two. And now I'm getting the wrap up because we're running over time. He's like, hi, she's just the topic. Oh, we're out of time. Okay, and we are getting to the point that probably one question or so, if I've totally glanced over something you want to say. I do apologize. I'm going to have to scurry because I'm on a panel across the hall. But I'll be around if you want to ask questions. Like, look in the bar, I'll be there.
You said you were being in the bar. So
and tomorrow I'm back here again, and I have plenty of time after that panel to ask questions. I really apologize for saying a bunch of shit and then scurrying away. But and if you have any questions, yeah, good luck with that. Challenge someone else. I won't stay around for them. But I will be here yet tomorrow for a different panel, and I can answer questions from this then as well. Or, like I said, catch me in the bar. And I do, however, disclaim all liability and offer no warranties, depending on how late in the evening it is you find me and ask me.
I hope this is under a 10-word answer.
Have you not been here for the past hour?
Copyright is life of the author plus 70 years now. Used to be 40, now it's 70. 50? Well, it's a long time. In a work that is under the law, the property of an entity that is not a person, how long does that protection last?
It's publication, 95 years from publication.
That's what I wanted to know.
Until we get to that point where Mickey Mouse is going to call out.
Well, okay, first off, Mickey Mouse is trademarked. They don't care. And yeah. second off, that's a whole different one, and I'll talk Eldridge with you anytime you want. I'll take on Leslie on Eldridge, because I think he's just dead wrong. But that's okay. That one really doesn't apply to this panel. So I think at that point, we're done. I'll let the next folks come up here. And thank you for listening to me ramble.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. My 1 o'clock is podcasting Creative Commons.